Welcome to Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host, and we're a group of law enforcement professionals that talk about today's news and issues, but we do it from a law enforcement perspective. And let me introduce Chief Ralph Ornelas from California, and he's formerly with the L.A. County Sheriff's Office and retired there, became chief of police, and he's still home in California, so you got to love that. So, and I love California. I love Carmel. And I know, I think the chief shares my opinion on that. It's just a special place, you know.
So. I do, Chip, and audience. And hey, welcome to be back on your show. The last time was January 2nd with Dr. Joel, and I appreciate being here with you today. And I'm the lone survivor with you, you know.
You are. Everybody else is like puckered out. So, a shout out to our sponsors. You know, our title sponsor is Gulls at Gulls.com. Also, Compliant Technologies, our satellite sponsor. We have AeroPrecisionUSA.com, our arm sponsor. We have GunLearn.com, MyMedicare.live, Safeguard Recruiting, our streaming sponsor. And thanks to them, we're streaming to over 1 million followers right now. And then TwoBells.com, they built a new online store at LeoRoundtable.com. Please check that out. You get some really cool gear. And also FisherOrlandoBass.com. So Zach has got a bass fishing charter based out of Orlando, and you have your choice of doing the bass fishing or the alligator hunting. That's the wild Florida alligator you catch and relocate. It's a great opportunity. FishOrlandoBass.com. A shout out to Brian Burns for the Tampa Free Press at TampaFP.com. Thanks for carrying our content. Brian, also former lawman.com with Ray Dietrich and lawofficer.com with Travis Shakes. Thanks to all those entities for helping make the show happen. And now, what in the world are we going to be talking about today? You know, there is breaking news. I'm not going to get too into it because I've read the article, but I want to be more prepared when we cover. But Fox News has just released, they've connected a millionaire allegedly bankrolling the Minneapolis agitator groups through dark money network. And this guy, he fled to China. Not because they were uncovering this, but he went to China. But it's some interesting stuff, and he's hooked in now with the, according to the article, the Chinese Communist Party, and I'll say allegedly. He's a former American tech guy, Neville Roy Singham, and so we'll have more information about that, you know, coming up on Monday. But that's a huge story, guys. So we'll get into that, you know, next week. The stuff we're really going to be breaking down today, it's going to be ex-Illinois deputy sentenced to 20 years in prison in a fatal officer-involved shooting of Sonya Macy. So that is the black female with the pot of boiling water. And we've been covering that extensively. We knew he was convicted, but now he's been sentenced. So we're going to be covering that. Also, NYPD officers, they fatally shot an armed man with a knife inside a hospital after swinging it at cops and patients. There will be some critique involved of the officers present at the scene. And then we got NYPD officers fatally shooting a suspect who brandished a fake handgun at them. And I don't know why they say fake handgun, because it's not like you really knew at the time it was fake. It's just, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, after the fact. And then Blendon Township trustees, they vote to put an officer, Connor Grubb, back on active duty. We'll explain why. Bakersfield police body cam shows an officer shooting Fabian Lopez, leaving him in critical condition. We got a New Orleans police recruit taken into ICE custody. And that's an interesting story. Then Jacksonville, not far from me, police, they fatally shoot a domestic disturbance suspect when he pulls out a gun. I don't think he'll be doing that again. So Chief, if you're ready, let's start off with, I know you want to get the update too, but let me this update one, it's been the, it's been a hot topic over the last year. So globalordnancenews.com is where it comes from. Ex-Illinois deputy sentenced to 20 years in prison and a fatal officer-involved shooting of Sonya Macy. The thing I really didn't like about this is that when the shooting first happened, there are a couple videos out. There's two videos. We had two officers and we have two body cams, right? But you couldn't find the second body cam, the one that, in my opinion, helped exonerate the officer. You couldn't find it. Now, I finally was able to get a hold of it, but I'm telling you, that is like next to impossible to find. So in this article, a former Illinois sheriff's deputy was sentenced Thursday to 20 years in prison, two decades, for fatally shooting Sonya Macy, who had dialed 911 to report a possible prowler outside her Springfield home. Sean Grayson, that's our officer, 31 years old, convicted back in October. He received the maximum possible sentence, and he's been incarcerated since he was charged in the killing. Now, during the sentencing hearing, you know, he apologized, saying that he wished he could bring back Macy, spare her family the pain he caused. I'm not too pleased with some of the stuff. I'm thinking he was coached on this, and maybe he just something had to do it. But his attorney had asked for a sentence of 6 years, noting that Grayson, he has late stage colon cancer and it's already spread to his liver and his lungs, and that's horrible. And this is some of the stuff he said. He said, I made a lot of mistakes that night. There were points when I should have acted and I didn't. I froze, he said. And he said, I made terrible decisions that night. I'm sorry. So I think it was just trying to appeal to the, to the people that were there. And just in, just as a refresher for people wondering about this, Sonya Macy's the black female. It was a prowler call, but when the officers got there, things just weren't adding up. She's just crazy. And we call them signal 20s here. And so they're inside the house talking to her. They moved from outside to inside. There was something like fireworks or something going on. I think it was right around either the 4th of July or New Year. Something was going on. They go inside the house, they're talking to her, and there's a pot of boiling water on the stove. And so one of the officers mentions to her, hey, you may want to, take that off. And when she does it, she's in the kitchen and she ducks down behind the counter out of their view with a pot of freaking boiling water. And so the body cam that most of us see, it's of the officer that is furthest away from her, with his gun out saying, hey, I'm going to shoot you. But then the body cam that's really hard to see, the other officer goes up because he can't see her. They want to see where she's at. Some people say they could have turned around and run away, turned their back to her, but they didn't know if she was grabbing a weapon or what. He walks up to the counter and he looks over to see where she's at. And there she is, crouched down with a pot of boiling water. She stands up in a throwing motion, throwing it at them. And that's when they shoot her. So that's the way it happened. And of course, the thing that bothers me the most, and I know that not all officers can say this, but when I grew up and I worked in the projects, the black community, the black women, this is what they would do. And I've told the story many times to where one of my first calls experiencing this, there was a black woman who, I don't think they were married. She just had a boyfriend and black male sleeping in bed. She had reason to believe that he was cheating on her. So she super glued his eyelid shut while he's sleeping, grabs that pot of boiling water off the stove, and she just starts dousing him with it. He wakes up screaming in pain. When I got there, he was bleeding because he had forced his eyes open, and he's just, his skin is just like, it was horrible watching the effects of that. And sometimes they use potash, which will permanently, a black person will permanently bleach their skin white. And you can go to the projects and you can walk and you can see people that have potash thrown on them because it scars and disfigures them for life. We even had a story not too long ago, a couple months ago, where someone was boiling substance was thrown on them, and it just severe discarring and disfigurement, well justifying the use of deadly force. So then, that was my pet peeve with this, and I hate to see the guy convicted, much less get 2 decades in prison. But I don't know who the experts were and the people representing him either. So, Chief Ralph.
Well, first of all, I didn't get a chance to look at the video, so I'm behind the eight ball on that. But based on reading the article, it's shameful that he has to get 20 years. I think it may be excessive based on what took place. But I always look at audience and Chip, now that it's over and he's been adjudicated and he's got sentences and stuff, what can we learn from this? And what could have been put in place in regards to tactics, approach to this? Could they introduce a shield with them when they went in? Could they, kind of held a door? Could they get a shield to come inside with them? Did they use a taser at all? Did they have a baton with them or something like that to be able to take this person in custody without shooting? That said.
Yep. None of that would have been. She was compliant. She was compliant until she ducked behind the counter. So no need for shield. No need for taser.
I mean, she grabbed the pot. Yes, you could actually kill somebody with a boiling pot of water and stuff, but I always look at now, it's over, but what could that police department learn from that experience? Because you always try to go back and say, what do we learn from this from a training point of view? I mean, so it's...
Back their officer.
What?
Back their officer. And I'm sorry. Look, that boiling water is not going to kill anybody. But it's serious bodily injury or harm, and that because you don't have to be in fear of death, but you know, and they told her to get the pot of boiling water off the stove. So it wasn't, everything was like kosher until it wasn't suddenly. And so, you know, you don't walk in and talk to a complainant on a prowler call with a ballistic shield. And they're just sitting there and they casually, they're joking and stuff. But then when she goes to grab it, she starts rebuking them in the name of Jesus. And that was one of the first flags. They already knew she was a little off, but then she rebukes them in the name of Jesus. And she's got this, and then she grabs this pot of boiling water and she doesn't set it down anywhere. She ducks down behind the counter. There were, you know, and I'm telling you, I would have shot and killed her too. I would have done that, and I would have been completely justified. But you know, I'm here in Tampa, Florida, and they're there. I just see it as a huge, huge injustice. That thing really bothers me.
Well, again, the jury's the one that made the decision. What was his attorneys? How they put that case on? What were the experts that stood on behalf of him, and how did they come off? Because I'll tell you right now.
Commercial break. Good. Hold that thought. We'll be right back.
My family only cares about one thing, that I come home safe.
At Galls, every order begins with a promise. Made with purpose. Stitched for support. Backed with pride. Answered by dedicated hands. Delivering the standard you have sworn to uphold. We serve more than the mission. We serve the person. Each piece is engineered to help get our first responders through the shift and back home safe.
Now it's time to talk about Compliant Technologies at ComplianTechnologies.com. And of course, my favorite product they have is called the Glove. But they're committed to providing non-lethal solutions to help officers gain the upper hand safely and rapidly in a humane, low-optics manner, utilizing what they call their CD3, which stands for Conductive Distraction and De-escalation Technology. The flagship product they have, we all know by now, is called the Glove. It's helped officers not only tens of thousands of times, but I think it's over 250,000 deployments with absolutely no injuries. And you heard that correctly. I said no injuries. The Glove has actually achieved that rare non-lethal status in an arena that predominantly can only offer less lethal results. And when it comes to weapons retention, transitioning to a sidearm or conductive energy weapon, the Glove at ComplianTechnologies.com, they have virtually eliminated weapons confusion. So stay ahead of the game with Compliant Technologies and the revolutionary CD3 that hundreds of agencies have already turned to nationwide. And friends, take it from me, when it comes to safety, this is one of the most common sense, hands-on solutions that's ever come along. So go to ComplianTechnologies.com today and tell them that Chip sent you. Again, that is ComplianTechnologies.com, and make sure you watch those cool videos as well. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. We're joined by Chief Ralph Ornelas from California. We've been talking about the Sonya Macy decision. The officer involved in that shooting, that fatal shooting, has just been sentenced to 20 years in prison. We're just kind of, you know, discussing that. I don't know that the chief and I are on the same wavelength on this one or not, you know, which is fine, but chief, go ahead.
No, you know, I wouldn't say we're not on the same wavelength. I think it's just, you know, I was looking at things, as I stated previously, going back on the air, is that, okay, it's happened. I don't agree with 20 years. I don't agree with the jury's decision, but I always say, let's learn from this incident. We have to dissect it apart. There's tactical, there's a leadership decision moment of it. There's also a tactical approach to it. And I say this on behalf of the audience that's listening, is for the future officers. We have to learn from every incident. And I would hope that department in Illinois does do a deep dive and look at this incident. And that's the only thing, because I'm not going to overturn it. You and I disputing it, you know, you have a certain viewpoint. I have a certain viewpoint. It makes me sad that a young officer has got to go to prison, and also he's got cancer. You know, I had one of my deputies back in the day. He did something, and he went to federal prison, got cancer, and thank God the federal judge at the time, his wife got a hold of the federal judge. They got the U.S. Marshals to bring him to Duke University. They did perform, you know, surgery on, and he survived colon cancer. So, But you know something. It's sad either way. It's sad for, you know, this officer, what he had to go through. But again, I say this, who were the experts giving the testimony on his behalf?
Yeah, I, yeah, that's a good point.
Should they brought in Chip to block, or, you know, Brett, or, you know, Ralph Ornelas, or Jeff Weninger, or, you know, whoever else to be able to speak on his behalf? Because you could have people, Chip, and you know this, who may be lawyers but didn't experience some things that when you do it and you take the experience plus maybe a law degree to speak on behalf of an officer going through something like this.
Yeah. No, I agree. That's a good question. They didn't have guys like Jamie Borden, who's the head of Critical Incident Review, or Von Kleem, who's with Force Science. And this is what these guys do. They're the best in their field. They're nationally recognized, and they didn't have these guys. Those are the guys they should have had. I would have loved to have gone there and talk about it. But my talk is more on experience. You know, they know the science behind it. But I just know that in that situation, I would have pulled the trigger every day, all day long. It's not even a question. It's not even up for debate where I come from, because it's either, unless you're going to take the hit and be disfigured and scarred for the rest of your life,
it's very interesting, Chip. We're talking about this, and you got the Blandon Township in Ohio. We're talking about, here's a difference of juries, right?
Well, they only know what they're being educated on, or what they're being told, though. You know, so I don't necessarily fault the jury completely, because the evidence may not have been presented to them.
Well, let me elaborate on the other one. Officer Grubb from Blandon Township, they had different experts testing on behalf of this Officer Grubb compared to Officer Grayson.
Oh, you're talking about the other story, the other update story.
Yeah. That's what I'm talking about. Number two, that's what I say. You look at two different scenarios and look at the end result of the Blandon Township on Article 2.
Well, let's skip the video. Let's go straight to that. Then WSU.org, Blandon Township trustees, they both poked this police officer, Connor Grubb, back on active duty. But here's what happened. So the township trustees, they voted, and it was a unanimous vote, by the way, on Wednesday to reinstate this Blandon Township police officer, Connor Grubb, and he's back on active duty. Now, the trustees put him on, he had previously been on paid administrative leave in November, shortly after a jury acquitted him of murder and other charges. It was a 2023 shooting death of a 21-year-old named Takiya Young. Now, Takiya Young was pregnant, and people will remember this. We covered it. Pregnant, accused of shoplifting at a Kroger's. Officer Grubb shot her through the car windshield in the parking lot during the confrontation with police. There was another officer on the driver's side, and then he was in front of the car. Body camera shows Young's car moving forward and apparently striking Officer Grubb before he fired his gun. And the Blandon Township trustee, April Zobel, said that the decision to put him back on active duty was a difficult one, but she said the experts assured her that it was the right outcome. And, of course, you know, he had been cleared. So, good point, Chief.
Yeah, I mean, I looked at, now, I did look at the video that numerous times, and Graham versus Connor, she hit him with the car. Sad, you got a young lady who's pregnant who's killed. You know, she committed a crime. It's a misdemeanor. You know, I mean, I've confronted situations like this, but the other thing is this, even one of the other experts said, and this, we could go back to the Renee Good case. My experience in South Central A, I never get in front of a car. I mean, there's no way I get in front of a car. And even in this policy with Blandon, it says don't be approaching a car, don't be in front of a car, you know, but that's what he did. He's still justified in the shooting based on the experts that testified on his behalf.
Why, I remember that he walked over to back up the officer that was confronting her outside the driver's door that was trying to get her to get out of the car.
The sergeant was on the passenger driver's door, yeah.
Well, yeah, the driver's door, yeah. So I know this guy was walking up. Now, he could have been on the passenger side, but then there would have been a potential crossfire situation. I mean, I guess he could have, you know, I don't know where, you know, it's just one of those things that ended up the way that it was. I mean, you can spend your time trying to tactically not be in front of a car. I don't know. It's like the officer, you know, that with the Good shooting that happened in Minneapolis, you know, where he walked in front of the car and, you know, the back of the other officer, but the tires were turned the other way and stuff. And I hate to be overly tactical. And then, of course, you know, you're more susceptible to some things too. I don't know. I didn't have much of an issue with it. Of course, it was initially a misdemeanor shoplift, but the moment she hit him with a car, it turned into a felony too. So
absolutely. But you know, what's really interesting is here's the sergeant I hate to be, in a way, I'm sorry, but here's a sergeant who's got stripes on his side approaching the passenger side. And it appeared to me, Chip and audience, here's a sergeant not taking a more of a disciplined approach to addressing her, you know, yeah. And then also if you see, as she starts to drive away, did you notice her butt of the gun, he tried to hit the butt of the gun on the window.
All right, guys, introducing Aero Defense by Aero Precision at AeroPrecisionUSA.com, a beacon of durability, dependability, and all-American craftsmanship in the realm of duty rifles. And yes, we're talking about long guns. They're born from an aerospace engineering company, so you know these guys know what they're doing. And Aero Defense by Aero Precision demands perfection because selling for anything less is not an option when your life is on the line. Visit AeroPrecisionUSA.com for a lineup that matches every discipline because they basically have something for everybody. You know, way back since 1994, they've been quietly leading the air builder parts domain, but now they're making waves in the complete rifle arena with Solus bolt actions. And that's not all. Their M4E1 Pro and the Mod 4 handguards, they hit the market already at AeroPrecisionUSA.com. The embodiments of duty rifle excellence, but now they're being tailored for the civilian customer, which means that now you guys can get access to the Primo stuff and their M5 AR308 platform, nothing short of spectacular. So don't settle for less when you can have the best. Head over to AeroPrecisionUSA.com. Again, that is AeroPrecisionUSA.com. And welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host. We're joined by Chief Ralph Ornelas, all the way from California. And thanks for being on the show, Chief. Appreciate it. You know, we've been talking about some pretty interesting stories, and we talked about really two update articles back to back. I'll let you this last one. Did you have any more words on this? We had two officers that were treated totally differently. One with the Sonia Macy boiling pot of water. He shot and killed her when she was in the motion of throwing it on them, and he gets 20 years in prison. And her other officer that shot a shoplifting suspect, but only after she hit him with her car, which would have been a felony, he takes her out. She's pregnant, so it doesn't sound good, but that does not weigh into a decision of whether you use, you know, lethal or not. And so he ended up getting cleared and reinstated by his agency. So, wow.
Yeah, as we said previously, it was the fact that, number one, I think that Grayson on the first article, you know, he didn't have, I believe, some based on getting 20 years, experts really defending him the proper way, where a second article with Officer Grubb, he had some expert testimony that really advocated for him. But the other thing, going back to the Grubb case with the pregnant lady and the shoplifter, like we said, cooperate. Just cooperate when you get stopped. And I see this in South Central. I see it around the country. People, different videos on Instagram where, you know, people, they get stopped. Just cooperate and listen. And as you well articulated, Chip, there's a process if you don't like it. You know, complaints, get a hold of district attorney's office, get a hold of the chief of police of that agency, file a complaint. There's an avenue for you to articulate your displeasure in a traffic stop. Yeah. So, but when you resist and elevate the emotions and resisting an officer, that doesn't bode well at all out there. And, you know, you get an officer that may fear of his life, or look how many times people went for a gun, you know, in between the seat or the console, and there's a violent confrontation that was initiated by not cooperating.
No, you're right. You know, another thing that I hate to see, you know, when you're dealing with bad guys and you give them enough, if you don't take action right away, you get into some kind of a dialogue with them. Believe me, they're planning their next move in their head. They're trying to think about, how am I going to escape? And can I take this cop, or can I get to my gun or my knife? Does the cop know that I'm armed? All these things run through their head. So, and that's why I like the glove product so much, because, well, I'll tell you that story in a second, but back to getting these exchanges, don't make me tell you again, or, you know, take your hands out of your pocket, or do this or do that, or get out of the car. You know, the longer you have a dialogue with that guy and you're answering questions like, why are you pulling me over? You know, I wasn't speeding. This is not a debate. I'm giving you a lawful order, a lawful command that you have to comply with, or else you suffer the consequence, or else I extract you, I arrest you. And so these officers, and I don't know how they're being trained, but, you know, you start giving one warning's fine, but, you know, giving two, three, repeating your commands and stuff, you're just giving the bad guy the advantage.
It's
sad.
You know, Chip, you're 100% right. And I always learned this, and I used to teach my recruits and when I was a field training officer, he who hesitates loses. Okay. The problem that's happened today, though, is young officers. I go on ride-alongs at South Central all the time in Huntington Beach here too. The body-worn cameras and all everybody with the cell phones and stuff has our young officers on the heel sometimes. And the criminals know this and they're taking advantage of those 10 seconds in between to make their move. And I remember you and I, I think it was Dr. Joel, was an incident in Tampa where they had this one guy on a park bench. You remember that? That one incident. And then the guy kept on talking and talking. Eventually he assaulted and finally went from that into a foot pursuit and they shot the guy down the street. Okay.
Okay.
Well, when that guy was talking, he was planning his attack.
Yeah.
And that's what I mean by he who hesitates loses sometimes, because you got to read that body language. Hey, look, you're looking at a short little bullheaded guy like me that survived the streets of South Central in a one-person unit. And guess what? I didn't have body-worn cameras, didn't have to worry about all these phones out there at that time. But guess what? You don't hesitate when you feel, you sense what's going to go south.
You know, so when I had the glove applied in Vegas, Travis and I were in the same room. We're getting ready to go. So I volunteered to go first. And Travis says, hey, look, let's get like a safe word, you know, so that when you apply the glove and if we want to comply, we give the safe word. And so the safe word was something simple. Like the word was stop, S-T-O-P. So, I mean, what's the likelihood of forgetting that word, right? Well, I'll be damned. The glove goes on me. I can't remember the freaking word. It just out of my brain. That's the way the glove works. So, I mean, so when they say that you're in a vehicle and you're trying to do an extraction, you give the guy one warning and he doesn't do it. Like the good case where that officer was trying to extract her in Minneapolis, windows open. She had her arm out originally. He's reaching in if he just would have made contact with skin, it would have been game over. But if he would have had the glove, because the thought of driving or escaping or hitting the officer in front of her, none of that would have happened. She would not have had the capacity to do that. And so, yeah, I just tell you, experiencing that firsthand, and even a simple word like stop. And I swear I could not even think of the word. And I was in crisis mode because I'm thinking, you know, how do I make this, you know, I'm being electrocuted and how do I freaking make this thing go away? You know, I can't think of the freaking word, you know, it's just like, you know, crazy. Yeah. So, well, if you're ready,
I'm ready.
We got a video component. All right. So we got two NYPDs back to back. So our favorite law enforcement video channel called it's at rumble.com, but it's called This Is Butter. NYPD officers, they fatally shot an armed man with a knife inside a hospital after swinging it at cops and patients.
Put it down. Drop the knife. Hey, Charlie. Drop the knife. Lou, watch out. Drop the knife. Central, we have eyes. Drawing's gone. Any of you want a knife? Drop the knife.
Sir.
Drop it. Drop the knife.
Drop the knife. Sir, drop it.
Hey, floor 806, Central.
What's your name?
Drop the knife.
Drop it.
If you move forward, I'm going to shoot. Drop it. Is somebody else in there with him?
Yeah,
it's fine. Stop it. Is he okay? Drop it.
Back up.
What's your name? One of y'all got a taser on y'all? Drop it. Drop the knife. Drop it. I'm going to shoot. Drop it.
Drop the knife.
Shots fired. Central. Shots fired.
It's a pretty wild story. The video is even wilder. So we're in Brooklyn, New York. So the cops in Brooklyn, they shot and killed a guy. He was having an apparent mental health distress episode, which I think we can all agree on. He began cutting himself at the hospital on Thursday evening, and he took a staff member hostage in a room with a patient. So there's like three of them, right? So it happens on the eighth floor of the New York Presbyterian Brooklyn Methodist Hospital, and it's within the confines of the 78th precinct. And this is happening just before 5:30 p.m. on January the 8th. So NYPD said the hospital security staff, they observed the disturbed man. He's cutting his body. He's got some kind of a sharp instrument. And then he barricades himself inside of a room with an elderly patient and the staff member. Security detail, they call for backup. They want cops to come, and the cops get there pretty quickly. They're met by a group of doctors, nurses, and hospital security staff, and they say that the guy's barricaded and that he also has a knife. I don't think it was a knife. It was a sharp object, but doesn't matter. When they get to the room, there's blood all over the walls. It's splattered across the exterior of the door. And this is according to NYPD Assistant Chief Charlie Minch. The subject came, this happened a couple of times, but he comes into the door frame and displayed a bloody weapon. Now, Minch, the assistant chief, said that for the next several minutes, responding officers, they attempted to convince this guy to drop the weapon, but he refused to. And it's not, you know, we always want one officer doing the communication. They didn't get that memo. So it's extremely confusing. And then we got one officer having his own mental health crisis, you know, on body cam, right? But I'll let the chief cover that one. And so this guy refuses to follow commands. He attempts to close the door multiple times before walking towards the cops. Now, when he walks towards the cops the first time, they simultaneously deploy a taser and they discharge a firearm. Taser's ineffective. I suspect he got hit with the firearm. It doesn't initially say. He backs back into the room, and then he tries to close the door again. But there's still two individuals inside the room with him, a staff member and the elderly patient, right? So for the next four minutes, they're trying to kick the door open, issuing verbal commands to drop the weapon and stuff. And he's got two people in there with a sharp object, you know. The subject advances towards officers again after the 4 minutes, and he still has the weapon in his hands. And once again, we got taser, and why they're doing taser, I don't know. And they do a gunshot, and they hit him in the torso. So the unnamed 62-year-old perpetrator ended up being treated at the hospital and ultimately pronounced dead. I wonder how hard they were working on him. So the other people, no other people were harmed, though. The officers were treated for ringing in the ears as a result of the shooting in that space. Sources familiar with the investigation reported that man's weapon was a piece of toilet that he had sharpened and fashioned into a makeshift weapon. Pretty ingenious. Got himself killed with that. The man himself had been admitted to the hospital the day before, but they didn't say why. So that's what we have. And we got almost a minute and a half before we take our next break. Chief Ornelas.
Well, first of all, you know, good explanation, the whole thing. Number one, command and control. You know, you mentioned it. I've been involved in a situation like this in 1983 in a hospital. One voice yelling commands. You know, that's number one. You look at, and you, as you say, everybody's screaming. And when you have that, when a person has mental health issues, it compounds the confusion. What do we do? I mean, the yelling and screaming, I got to be honest with you. And I have two nephews on NYPD. So unprofessional. First of all, Chip, clear the floor of all the other people, even the security people. Just keep it one law enforcement agency, NYPD, right? Designate Chip the Block the only communicator, okay? The other thing, Chip the Block or Ralph Ornelas, the voice has to lower, not increase the volume, lower the volume, all right? And I handled this situation, 1983, Chip.
I'll tell you what, hold that thought, commercial break. Stick with us, guys. This story's going to be great, I can already tell. We'll be right back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about GunLearn at GunLearn.com. And, you know, as law enforcement officers, we deal with guns and we deal with ammo every day, but it's what we don't know about them that gets us in the trouble. Lawsuits, injuries, lost prosecutions, disciplinary actions. But gunlearn.com, they have your back. You can quickly become extremely firearm knowledgeable by simply learning 14 training modules from the convenience of your home or your office, or by attending the live seminar at gunlearn.com. You can also become a safe, accurate, and competent certified firearm specialist like our very own Captain Brett Bartlett and also attorney Ken Apieco. Now, the course has had huge success in raising the bar of firearm knowledge, and GunLearn has been a trusted source since way back in 2011 by gun manufacturers, federal agencies, forensic organizations, and police departments nationwide. Now, the founder is Dan O'Kelly, and he has got a deal for you if you have your own agency. If you're a chief or a sheriff, you can host a seminar for absolutely no cost. It's an amazing opportunity. Go to GunLearn.com to get more information. Again, that is GunLearn.com. You'll be glad that you did. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the Law Enforcement Talk Show. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. We're joined by Chief Ralph Ornelas all the way from California. So we had Florida, we got California on the show. There really is a difference, a way of doing things. It's just the way, and that's why, you know, when we, I think Jeff Winninger was our break into the California over on the West Coast, but it really, you know, it's really telling a different side of the story, because even when it comes to training and tactics, things are just different. I'm not saying it's wrong. It's just, you know, when you're, it's just nice when you're given a police perspective to give the full police perspective, right? So Chief, you're getting into an interesting point on the story. If you could just refresh our listeners or viewers on what we were talking about, and then take off from there.
You know, we're talking about audience is as this incident happened at NYPD at Presbyterian Hospital, and it's confusion. Too many offices, too many voices trying to control this. This person has mental health distress. He's got a makeshift a weapon. He's got a patient and a staff member inside. So when you have too many people yelling, screaming orders, there's confusion. No command and control. So what I wanted to say is to Chip and the audience is this: 1983, I'm a one person unit. I get a call of a man grabbed a lady into the men's bathroom, Harbor General Hospital and Carson Stations area here in Los Angeles County, right? I get there, I ask for backup, there's only one deputy, Sergeant Bob Livingston, God rest his soul, gets there. And we have no shield at that time. We had a taser about this big, the old tasers. It didn't function. So you know what we used? He had this knife, right? We used two garbage pail covers, metal garbage pail covers.
Oh yeah.
We hit the door. We hit him so hard, pushed him back. I push him to a wall. The other deputy and sergeant grabbed the female out of it. So we pushed him. And he stood up. And he's swinging the knife. I pull back. I back out. I got my gun out, right? He runs to the back of the bathroom. And we're trying to negotiate with him, right? We didn't hear anything anymore. So me, the sergeant, and the other deputy go in. He cut his throat.
You're kidding me.
He killed himself. He killed, but the point.
With a knife?
He just went wham like this. And his blood all over the place. He died. But the point of the story is we had command and control. I was the only voice. I relayed everything to the sergeant. The sergeant goes, Ralphie, let's go with that. Let's go hit him. We had these big garbage pail metal, and we just rushed the door, knocked him back. Deputy grabbed the female out. I kept on pushing him. I pull myself out of it, right? And I'm yelling at him, come on, give up, give up. Now we only have him by himself. So time's on our side, right? Lo and behold, he goes in a stall and he kills himself.
Well, you know what happened, Ralph? You know, he said, these two crazy LA County Sheriff's deputies are out of their freaking mind grabbing trash can bales and lids and coming at me. What are they going to do to me? You know, once they get a hold of me, I'm going to take the easy route out. Then I'm just going to, that's what happened.
But we gave him the opportunity when he retreated back into the stall to live, and he didn't. So I'll tell you another story. And in 2013, high power, when I was a captain, men's central jail, we had this inmate who slashed another inmate, and he had a shank in his hand, a jail-made stabbing instrument. Now, at this juncture, we have deputies with helmets, bullet, you know, vest on, and now we got a really great shield. When we had a tactical entry team, they went, and this guy was 6'4", 250. Three deputies, they hit him so hard, pinned him against the wall with the shield. He couldn't come over to stab. And guess what? We had the deputy come around, taser his ass. He fell down, rolled him over, handcuffed him.
You know, I'm still fascinated. The first story, most people can't kill themselves with a knife. That's very, I mean, you have some people slashing their wrists, but it's very new, especially females. So very unusual that he had the capability to do that. That's very new, very unusual.
I mean, I've never seen it, but guess what? He was dead.
Yeah. Well, I don't doubt you. Hey, we got exactly 5 minutes, and we've got another NYPD. If you're up for it, we have another NYPD story.
I'm ready.
Your nephews work there and stuff. I didn't scan the names to make sure that they weren't your nephews or anything, you know.
No, we're good.
Okay.
They're detectives.
Okay. Rumble.com. This is Butter. NYPD officers, they fatally shoot a suspect who brandished a fake handgun at them. I love how they put that in the article, like the cops know it's a fake gun and they shoot him anyhow. But so we're in a place called West Village, New York. NYPD shot and killed a guy in West Village late on Thursday night after he allegedly pointed a fake handgun at them. Law enforcement officers, they say this incident started around 10:53 p.m., so close to midnight, January the 8th. Officers from the 6th precinct now, they're flagged down by the driver of a Dodge, tells them that a white BMW had hit them, you know, collided with them in an accident and was attempting to leave the scene. So the BMW was actually stopped in traffic. So when the officers approach, a 37-year-old bad guy driver exits the BMW and he draws what appears to be a firearm and he points at the officers. Now it's dark. There are some replays of this and some slow motion stuff. Because when it goes in real time, it's very hard to get it. The cops respond by opening fire on the bad guy, striking the suspect multiple times. Now, Chief James McCarthy weighs in on this, states that the suspect, after the shooting, was still holding on to the weapon, even though he's on the ground. Eyewitnesses said the cops could be heard screaming, "Hey, drop the gun. We want to help you." Which I love hearing because that communication is so important. Police call EMS. They rush the guy to Bellevue Hospital, but he's still pronounced dead. Police sources later confirmed that the unarmed man's weapon was, in fact, an air pistol that appeared to be realistic. So there you go. Chief Ornelas.
You know, first of all, justified shooting. Absolutely. I have concern about the female Gonzalez coming out from her car, going to the right. I mean, she could almost basically, if it, you know, walks up on this guy coming out with a weapon like this, and then she had to back out. Rodriguez on the left side, he shoots. I think she's shot too. The part I have issues with training is this. It goes back to even the first incident with NYPD, Chip, in the audience. Rodriguez is so out of control with his voice. I mean, there's no control of this. The other thing is this. Further up the street, I worried about crossfire. You know, I mean, you know, I think they did say some of that. It's hard because the yelling is so loud about Rodriguez and Gonzalez are sharing information. But I mean, you listen to Rodriguez, the officer, he's stating basically, G, are you hit? He's calling her G for Gonzalez. Are you hit? Now, you know, first of all, I didn't see any flame coming from the revolver of the suspect. But then he's also putting out, we don't know if we are hit. Rodriguez is saying this. Like, I mean, you know, you've been around, Chip. I've been around. I think you know when a partner, God forbid, gets shot. But he's putting out, we don't know if we're hit. Now, that concerns me at the mental state of this Rodriguez officer. The manner he's out of control with his voice and his emotions, you don't know if you're hit or not, or you know, it could happen, but, or your partner's not hit. And then the other thing, the guy's laying there, is not moving. Finally, an officer who is from down the street comes in the other direction, finally steps up. But Rodriguez and Gonzalez, I think, would have been there all day and all night, standing there all day waiting for this guy to respond or put his hand up. Hey, I'm giving up. I mean, I got to tell you, I'm sorry if I'm being too critical, Chip, but I got to tell you, concerned me about the training and the response from this Rodriguez and Gonzalez.
Yeah, I don't know if it's, I know exactly what you're talking about. And just like there's people just don't want to go hands on either, you know, but
that's it. That's it. Exactly.
There's a reluctance to engage. And I don't know if it's a new breed of officer, if it's the training or a combination of the both. I don't know.
Yo, Tripp, you hit it right the nail on the head. I gave a lot of verbiage, but you hit it right on the head. It was about walking up on the person. Obviously, they have other equipment. This is where I always say they have a shield. Okay. Hey, Sarge, you got the shield. Can you bring the shield up? Walk up on with a shield, Chip. I mean,
yeah. I mean, I was very touchy-feely when I was a cop. And, hands-on. But even when I'm touching bad guys, I'm touching them. I'm very touchy. And you know what? Sometimes I'm touchy because I want to see if I feel anything in the clothing or whatever. You know, you're probably the same way. You know, I want to see if he's got something on his middle of his back or whatever. Anyhow, you always have your hands up in front of you. You always want to be prepared for whatever. I'm preaching to the choir, though. I know you live by that rule. So, hey, Chief Ornelas, another fantastic show. Thanks so much for being back on the show. The time just goes when you're on the show, especially you and Schultz, it just goes by so fast. So thanks so much for being on the show. I want to mention the Wounded Blue at thewoundedblue.org, Lieutenant Randy Sutton's, charity. And also, let me get to our sponsors. Then I want you to talk about what you're doing, when it comes to drugs and awareness. But goals.com, complytechnologies.com, aeroprecisionusa.com. We have gunler.com and medicare.life, safeguard recruiting, Two Bells and Fish, OrlandoBass.com with Zach. We appreciate you guys watching the show. We'll see you back tomorrow at 12 noon Eastern.